They were overjoyed to be back, giddy with excitement. They hugged and patted one another on the back. They had returned, safely negotiating all the tunnels. Abruptly, amidst a hail of static, the radio began blaring out the machine status report. All three Benzels were decelerating. The built-up electrical charge was dissipating. Ellie wondered how much time had passed. She glanced at her watch. It had been a day, at least, which would bring them well into the year 2000. Appropriate enough. Wait till they hear what we have to tell them. She patted the compartment where the dozens of video microcassettes were stored. How the world would change when these films were released. The space between and around the Benzels had been repressurized. The airlock doors were being opened. Now there were radio inquiries about their well-being. "We're fine. Let us out. You won't believe what happened to us." The five emerged from the airlock happy, effusively greeting their comrades who had helped build the machine. The Japanese technicians saluted them. Project officials surged toward them. The clocks read 15:20. Activation had occurred close to 3 o'clock the previous afternoon, so they had been gone just a little over 24. "What day is it?" Ellie asked. Something was wrong. "Somebody, for heaven's sake, what day is it?" "How do you mean, Dr. Arroway? It's today, Friday, December 31st, 1999. It's New Year's Eve. Are you all right?" Vege was telling Arkhangelsky to let him begin at the beginning, but only after his cigarettes were produced. Project officials and representatives of the machine consortium were converging around them. Ellie saw Derhir wedging his way to her through the crowd. As soon as he came close, she asked, "Ken, from your perspective, what happened?"
"Nothing. The vacuum system worked. The Benzels spun up, they accumulated quite an electrical charge, they reached the prescribed speed, and then everything reversed."
"What do you mean?"
"The Benzels slowed down, and the charge dissipated. The system was repressurized, the Benzels stopped, and all of you came out. The whole thing took maybe 20 minutes. We couldn't talk to you while the Benzels were spinning. Did you experience anything at all?"
She laughed. "Ken, my boy, have I got a story for you."
There was a party for project personnel to celebrate machine activation and the momentous new year. The five did not attend. Project Directorate had quickly concluded that something had gone wrong. The five found themselves hustled away from the milling crowds of government and consortium officials for a preliminary interrogation. It was thought prudent, project officials explained, for each of them to be questioned separately. Derhir and Valerian conducted her debriefing in a small conference room. There were other project officials present, including a member of the Russian staff. They listened politely, but they had difficulty understanding the sequence of events. Much of what she related somehow worried them. Her excitement was non-contagious. They treated her with deference, but she knew what they were thinking. The only function of the machine had been in 20 minutes to produce a memorable illusion, or just possibly to drive the five of them mad. She played the video microcassettes for them, each carefully labeled Vega Ring System, Galactic Center Starscape, Beach. The cassettes were blank. She learned later that the instruments carried by the others had also somehow failed. Peter Valerian wanted to believe her, Derhir also, but it was hard for them. The story the five had come back with was entirely unsupported by physical evidence. Also, there hadn't been enough time. They had been out of sight for only 20 minutes. This was not the reception she had expected, but she was confident it would all sort itself out. For the moment, she was content to play the experience back in her mind and make some detailed notes. She wanted to be sure she would forget nothing. Late on New Year's Day, a number of unscheduled flights arrived at Sapporo International Airport. One brought the new American Secretary of Defense, Michael Kitts, and a team of hastily gathered experts. Another had flown overnight from Moscow. 2 days later, a severe winter storm struck, and all traffic into the machine facility was interrupted. Some radio and all television links were severed. Apparently, a microwave relay tower had been blown down, and through most of the new interrogations, the only communication with the outside world was by telephone. Ellie allowed herself to think of the seashore again. And him. Whatever happened next, a wound deep inside within her was being healed. It had been the most expensive psychotherapy in history. And that's saying a lot, she thought. Debriefings were given to the other crew members by representatives of their nations, but they were perfunctory compared with the interrogations by Project personnel. Vega and Ellie underwent still more elaborate debriefings by the high-level teams brought from Russia and the United States. Kitz was in charge of Ellie's debriefing, and considering what short notice he must have been given, he had arrived surprisingly well-prepared. Valerian and Derhir put in an occasional good word for her, and every now and then asked a searching question. But it was Kitz's show. He told her he was approaching her story skeptically but constructively, in what he hoped was the best scientific tradition. He trusted she would not mistake the directness of his questions for some personal animus. He held her in the greatest respect. He would not permit his judgment to be clouded by the fact that he had been against the machine project from the beginning. She decided to let this pathetic deception pass unchallenged and began her story. At first, he listened closely, asked occasional questions, and apologized when he interrupted. By the second day, no such courtesies were in evidence. So the Nigerian is visited by his wife, the Indian by her dead husband, the Russian by his cute granddaughter, the Chinese by some Mongol warlord. Emperor Xin was not a Mongol. And you. You get visited by your dearly departed father, who tells you that he and his friends have been busy rebuilding the universe, for Christ's sake. This is straight religion. Don't you see that? You're essentially the only one of the five who was raised in the Judeo-Christian culture. And not only do you claim your own father came back from the dead, you actually expect us to believe that he made the universe? You're distorting what... Come off it, Arroway. Don't insult our intelligence. You don't present us with a shred of evidence. And you expect us to believe the biggest cock and bull story of all time? You know better than that. You're a smart lady. How could you figure to get away with it? She protested. Valerian protested also that this kind of interrogation was a waste of time. The machine was undergoing sensitive physical tests at this moment, and the validity of her story could be checked by physical evidence. Kitz agreed that that would be important, but the nature of Arroway's story, he argued, was revealing. It's just too pat. It's not imaginative enough. This was worse than she had thought possible. She felt a moment of panic. You think we made all this up? Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Arroway. When I was very young, I worked in the Cook County Prosecutor's Office. What we used to look for was opportunity, means, and motive.
To do what?
He looked at her in disgust and did not answer. But that implies a conspiracy. You think she lied, or Ada, or Devi? What I think is, we should move on to something more important. A first draft of the materials assessment report will be here tomorrow morning. Let's not waste more time on stories. We'll adjourn until then. Derhir had said not a word through the entire afternoon session. He offered her an uncertain grin. Clearly, he was weighing the possibility that she had gone crazy. Well, here it is. Kitz let the report fall to the table. You'll want to look through it, Dr. Arroway, but I can give you a quick summary. The dodecahedron apparently has been exposed to a very different environment than the benzels and the supporting structures. It's apparently been subjected to huge tensile and compressional stresses. It's a miracle the thing didn't fall to pieces, and you and the others as well. Also, it's apparently seen an intense radiation environment. There's low-level induced radioactivity, cosmic ray tracks, and so on. It's another miracle that you survived the radiation. Nothing else has been added or taken away. There's no sign of erosion or scraping on the side vertices that you claim kept bumping into the walls of the tunnels. There's not even any scoring, as there would have been if it re-entered the Earth's atmosphere at high velocity. Ellie was pleased.
So, doesn't that confirm our story? Michael, think about it. Tensile and compressional stresses, tidal forces, are exactly what you expect if you fall down a classical black hole. I don't know why we didn't feel it, but maybe the dodec protected us somehow.
and high radiation doses from the inside of the black hole and from the environment of the galactic center, a known gamma-ray source. There's independent evidence for black holes, and there's independent evidence for a galactic center. We didn't make those things up. I don't understand the absence of scraping, but that depends on the interaction of a material we've hardly studied with a material that's completely unknown. I wouldn't expect any scoring or charring because we don't claim we entered through the Earth's atmosphere. It seems to me the evidence almost entirely confirms our story. What's the problem?
The problem is you people are too clever. Look at it from the point of view of a skeptic. There's a bunch of bright people in different countries who think the world is going to hell in a handbasket. They claim to receive a complex message from space.
Claim?
Let me continue. They decrypt the message and announce instructions on how to build a very complicated machine at a cost of trillions of dollars. The world's in a funny condition, the religions are all shaky about the oncoming millennium, and to everybody's surprise, the machine gets built. There's one or two slight changes in personnel, and then essentially these same people get to sit down in the machine. Because of the way the thing's designed, no one can see them, and no one can talk to them after the thing is activated. So the machine is turned on, and then in 20 minutes, it turns itself off. These same people emerge from the machine all jaunty jolly, with some bullshit story about traveling faster than light inside black holes to the center of the galaxy and back. Now suppose you hear this story, and you're just ordinarily cautious. You ask to see their evidence. Pictures, videotapes, any other data. Guess what? It's all been conveniently erased. Do they have artifacts of the superior civilization they say is at the center of the galaxy? No. Nothing. The only physical evidence is some subtle damage done to the machine. So you ask yourself, couldn't people who were so motivated and so clever arrange for what looks like tension stresses and radiation damage, especially if they could spend $2 trillion faking the evidence? She gasped. This was a truly venomous reconstruction of events. He went on. I don't think anybody's going to believe your story. This is the most elaborate and the most expensive hoax ever perpetrated. You and your friends tried to hoodwink the President of the United States and deceive the American people, to say nothing of all the other governments on the Earth. You must really think everybody else is stupid.
Michael, this is madness. Tens of thousands of people worked to acquire the message, to decode it, and to build the machine. The message is on magnetic tapes and printouts and laser discs and observatories all over the world. You think there's a conspiracy involving all the radio astronomers on the planet and the aerospace and cybernetics companies and...
No, you don't need a conspiracy that big. All you need is a transmitter in space that looks as if it's broadcasting from Vega. I'll tell you how I think you did it. You prepare the message and you get somebody with an established launch capability to put it up. Probably as an incidental part of some other mission. And into some orbit that looks like sidereal motion. And maybe there's more than one satellite. Then the transmitter turns on. And you're all ready in your handy-dandy observatory to receive the message, make the big discovery, and tell us poor slobs what it all means.
Well, this was too much, even for the impassive Dahir. Really, Mike? Ellie cut him short. I wasn't responsible for most of the decoding. Lots of people were involved, Drumlin especially. He started out as a committed skeptic, as you know, but once the data came in, Dave was entirely convinced. You didn't hear any reservations from him.
Oh, yes. Poor Dave Drumlin. The late Dave Drumlin. You set him up. The professor you never liked.
Dahir slumped farther down in his chair, and she had a sudden vision of him regaling Kitz with second-hand pillow talk.
During the decrypting of the message, you couldn't do everything. Here's Drumlin, growing old, worried about his former student eclipsing him and getting all the credit. Suddenly, he sees how to be involved, how to play a central role. You appealed to his narcissism and you hooked him. And if he hadn't figured out the decryption, you would have helped him along.
Ellie rolled her eyes. You're saying that we were able to invent such a message? Really, it's an outrageous compliment to Vega and me. It's also impossible. It can't be done. You ask any competent engineer if that kind of machine with brand new subsidiary industries, components wholly unfamiliar on Earth, you ask if that could have been invented by a few physicists and radio astronomers on their days off. Even if we knew how, it would have taken years.
You had years, while Argus was getting nowhere. The project was about to be closed. Drumlin, you remember, was pushing that. So just at the right moment, you find the message, and there's no more talk about closing down your pet project. I think you and that Russian did cook up the whole thing in your spare time. You had years.
Mike, this is madness. Valerian interrupted to say he had known Dr. Arroway well during the period in question. She had done productive scientific work. She never had the time required for so elaborate a deception. Much as he admired her, he agreed that the message and the machine were far beyond her ability, or indeed anybody's ability, anybody on Earth. But Kitz wasn't buying it.
That's a personal judgment, Dr. Valerian. There are many persons, and there can be many judgments. You're fond of Dr. Arroway. I understand. I'm fond of her, too. It's understandable you would defend her. But there's a clincher. You don't know about it yet.
He leaned forward, watching Ellie intently.
The message stopped the moment we activated the machine. The moment the Benzels reached cruising speed, to the second, all over the world. We've held back telling you about it so we wouldn't distract you from your debriefing. The message stopped in mid-bit. Now, that was really foolish of you.
I don't know anything about it, Michael. But so what if the message stopped? It's fulfilled its purpose. We built the machine, and we went to where they wanted us to go. Kit smiled.
But it puts you in a peculiar position. The radio waves arriving on Earth right now are supposed to have been sent from Vega 26 years ago. There's no way that activating the machine can turn the message off until 26 years pass. I'm surprised you thought you could get away with this one.
Michael, listen. It's how we were able to get from here to there and back in 20 minutes. It can be an acausal around a singularity. I'm not an expert on this. You should be talking to Ada or Vega. This is wholly unexplored territory. It's not called a space-time continuum for nothing. If they can make tunnels through space, I suppose they can make some kind of tunnels through time. The fact that we got back a day early shows that they have at least a limited kind of time travel. So maybe as soon as we left the station, they sent a message 26 years back in time to turn the transmission off. I don't know.
But you see how convenient it is for you that the message stops just now. If it was still broadcasting, we could find your little satellite, capture it, and bring back the transmission tape. That would be definitive evidence of a hoax, unambiguous. But you couldn't risk that. So you're reduced to black hole mumbo-jumbo. Probably embarrassing for you.
Kitz pressed on, making sparkling new patterns of facts assemble themselves in the air before her, rewriting whole years of her life. She hadn't thought Kitz dumb, but she hadn't imagined him this inventive either. Perhaps he'd received help. But the emotional propulsion for this fantasy came from Kitz. This interrogation, this alternative interpretation of events, had roused something passionate in him. After a moment, she thought she saw what it was. The Five had come back with no immediate military applications, no political information, but only a story that was surpassing strange. And that story had certain implications. Kitz was now master of the most devastating arsenal on Earth, while the caretakers were building galaxies. He was a lineal descendant of a progression of leaders, American and Soviet, who had devised the strategy of nuclear confrontation. While the caretakers were an amalgam of diverse species from separate worlds working together in concert. Their very existence was an unspoken rebuke. Then consider the possibility that the tunnel could be activated from the other end, that there might be nothing he could do to prevent it. They could be here in an instant. How could Kitz defend the United States under such circumstances? His role in the decision to build the machine, the history of which he seemed to be actively rewriting, could be interpreted by an unfriendly tribunal as dereliction of duty. And what account could Kitz give the extraterrestrials of his stewardship of the planet, he and his predecessors? She regarded him with sympathy. For 100 generations at least, the world had been run by people much worse than he. It was his misfortune to come to bat just as the rules of the game were being rewritten. He was saying, "Don't you think the extraterrestrials treated you badly? They don't tell you what they're doing, they expose all your film, destroy all your data, and they don't even let you leave that stupid palm frond up there. If they had wanted to make it unambiguously clear you'd really gone somewhere, they would have brought you back a day later, or a week, right?
If they wanted to make it easy for you, they wouldn't have turned off the message, right? Why would they want to make it bad for you? How come the extraterrestrials don't confirm your story? You spent years of your life trying to find them. Don't they appreciate what you've done? Ellie, how can you be so sure your story really happened? If, as you claim, all this isn't a hoax, couldn't it be a delusion? It's painful to consider, I know. Considering the strain you've been under, though, it's no big deal. And if the only alternative is criminal conspiracy, maybe you want to carefully think this one through. Later that day, she met with Kitz alone. A bargain had in effect been proposed. She had no intention of going along with it, but Kitz was prepared for that possibility as well. "We've already issued a news release saying that the machine just didn't work. Naturally, we're trying to understand what went wrong. Then in a few weeks, we'll announce that we're still not getting anywhere. We've done the best we could, and the machine is too expensive to keep working on. Probably we're just not smart enough to figure it out yet. And there's still some danger, after all. The machine might blow up or something. So all in all, it's best to put the machine project on ice, at least for a while. It's not that we didn't try."
"And what, in your fantasy, becomes of us? The five of us?"
"After a little more debriefing, you'll be free to leave. I don't think any of you will be foolish enough to tell this cock and bull story on the outside. But just to be safe, we're preparing some psychiatric dossiers. You've always been a little rebellious, mad at the system, whichever system you grew up in. That's okay. It's good for people to be independent. We encourage that, especially in scientists. But the strain of the last few years has been not actually disabling, but trying. Especially for Dr. Zaraway and Lunacharsky. And scientists are highly strung anyway. If you've all become a little unhinged at the failure of the machine, everybody will be sympathetic, understanding. But nobody will believe your story. Nobody. If you behave yourselves, there's no reason that the dossiers ever have to be released. It'll be clear that the machine is still here. We're having a few wire service photographers in as soon as the roads are open. We'll show them the machine didn't go anywhere, and the crew. The crew is naturally disappointed, maybe a little disheartened. They don't want to talk to the press just yet. Don't you think it's a neat plan?" He smiled. "Don't you think we're being very reasonable after spending $2 trillion on that pile of shit? We could put you away for life, Arroway, but we're letting you go free. You don't even have to put up bail. I think we're behaving like gentlemen. It's the spirit of the millennium. It's Machindo."
In the end, the five were permitted to talk among themselves. Vega's interrogation had baffled him. They had not exactly accused him, but merely suggested that he was part of an anti-Russian conspiracy involving scientists from the West.
"I tell you, Ellie, the only remaining open question is the existence of intelligent life in our government."
"Yes, and in ours. I can't believe the president would allow Kitz to get away with this. She committed herself to the project." Vega shrugged.
"This planet is run by crazy people. Remember what they have to do to get where they are. Their perspective is so narrow, so brief. A few years. In the best of them, a few decades. They care only about the time they are in power. But they're not sure our story is a lie, Ellie. They cannot prove it. In their hearts, they wonder. A few even want it to be true. But it is a risky truth. They need something close to certainty. Perhaps we can provide it. We can refine gravitational theory. We can make new astronomical observations to confirm what we were told, especially for the Galactic Center and Cygnus A. They're not going to stop astronomical research. Also, we can study the Dodec, if they give us access. Ellie, we will change their minds."
She shook her head.
"I don't see how the governments could convince people this is a hoax."
"You don't.
Think of what else they've made people believe. No, Ellie, they're good at convincing. They need only say that the machine doesn't work, and that we've gone a little mad. I don't think we'd seem so mad if we all told our story together. But you may be right, Vege. Maybe we should try to find some evidence first. Will you be okay when you go back?
What can they do to me? You and I have a mutual security treaty, Ellie. As long as you're alive, they need me, and vice versa, of course.
If the story is true, they will be glad there was a Russian witness.
And like your people, they will wonder about military and economic uses of what we saw. All that matters is that we stay alive. We will tell our story, all five of us, discreetly, of course. At first, only to those we trust. But those people will tell others. The story will spread. There will be no way to stop it. Sooner or later, the governments will acknowledge what happened to us in the dodecahedron. And until then, we are insurance policies for each other.
Ellie, I am very happy about this.
It is the greatest thing that ever happened to me.